Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Voices of Hope. This week on the podcast, we have Anne and Jeanette. They're going to talk about how they discovered one another and how they both grew up in Mississippi, and they started talking about race together and racism, and they thought this was important enough to open up to our congregation, and they are leading a class on Sundays from 12 to 1:30, going over two books, one of them called White Awake by Daniel Hill, and So You Want to Talk About Race by, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the author's name of that, but you can pick those up in the fellowship hall. Join their class, and they talk about in this podcast why they thought this was going to be important to talk about, not just between them two, but invite others into the conversation and really talk about race and what are some of the fears we have about talking together about it. So enjoy the conversation. Well, Anne and Jeanette, thanks for joining us on the podcast. I had you guys on because you're starting a class here at New Hope talking about race. You also talked at Sunday worship service. Was that the 18th? No. It was somewhere in May. It was at some point, right? Talking about your experiences growing up in, was it Missouri?
Mississippi.
And so just tell people a little bit about yourself. And like each of you take a turn and then talk about how you met and how you started to talk about your upbringing in Mississippi and race and everything like that.
Okay. I grew up in Brookhaven, Mississippi, which is in the southern part of Mississippi, right in the Jim Crow area, separate but equal schools. I grew up in a single-parent home because my dad died when I was 4 months old, so it was just my mom. And three of us, three girls. And her dad had pulled her out of school when she was in 7th, 8th grade because he didn't believe in educating women. So as a result, when my dad died, and she had these three little girls, her only option was probably to become a maid, which she did. She made $10 a week.
Wow.
To support the three of us. And she took the money from my dad's death, because he died on the job, and bought a house that had an acre of land. So needless to say, we had a huge garden, and part of our responsibility growing up was to help her with washing jars and getting them sterilized and snapping beans and shelling peas and that kind of stuff. But because her dad didn't believe in educating women, she had a strong feel that we all go to college. And I'm the youngest of the three. And because my other two sisters went off to college, I decided I didn't want to follow them to the same college. So I went to Tuskegee University in Alabama. And then after that, my husband and I got married the morning of graduation and graduated that afternoon. And then he got a job in Washington, D.C., so we lived there for 5 years. And then moved to Michigan. And when we moved to Michigan, I realized that we were on a black family in that town. It was Ionia, Michigan. Hmm. And
is that on the east or west side?
I don't know. I'm directionally challenged. All I know is 30 miles from Grand Rapids and 30 miles
yes.
from Lansing.
Yeah, because I lived in West Michigan for a while.
Yeah.
And Ionia sounded familiar.
Yeah, so. There's two prisons there.
Okay.
And a prison hospital.
Yeah.
And otherwise, it's pretty much a farm community. Yeah. It was that. I don't know what it is now. But anyway, I looked up to the sky one day and I said, Lord, I don't know why I'm here, but there must be a reason. And I really credit that with who I am today, because it forced me out of the Southern feeling of being mistrustful of white people. And all of a sudden, you know, I found my first white friend and that sort of thing. It has some very interesting discussions there about race and what people believed and what they actually did. And from Michigan, from Ionia, Michigan, my husband got transferred to Jackson, Michigan. And then from there to San Diego, got a new job in San Diego. And we were there for 23 years. And after we retired, we moved here to Colorado. And I met Ann in Bible study. And she told me she was from, was it Yazoo?
No, Corinth.
Okay.
North Mississippi. North,
yeah. And that's how we met. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a surprise and a good surprise to meet somebody else from Mississippi. We grew up about the same time, so we had a lot of different experiences, but within the same kind of culture. Mm-hmm. Because so many people really haven't experienced, I think, race or grown up around anything racial. So our whole culture really at the forefront is race and racism. It's something you know every day. It's something that's part of you, whether you deal with it, whether it's positive or negative, it's just there as you grow up. So yes, I grew up in North Mississippi, right on the border of Tennessee and Alabama. But not real different as far as growing vegetables, canning everything, because that's what you did at that time. I stayed in Mississippi through my undergraduate degree, and after that, I moved to California, and that was kind of an awakening, because what I saw there was some things happening with what were then called Chicanos. And it really, people kind of were shocked that I paid any attention to that. Because after all, I was from Mississippi and I probably abused black people all the time. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the perception. So it really kind of opened my eyes to begin to read and to listen and to find out more about my own upbringing. So I've done that for years. It still doesn't mean I don't have a lot to learn, but that's really been helpful to me. So yes, when Jeanette and I met in Bible study, it was really a good meeting, a mm-hmm. good beginning of a relationship.
So then what brought up talking about race and how this became kind of this important topic for you two to talk about, and now bringing it to the congregation. Why? How did that come up?
Well, we during Bible study, there were certain incidences where we did talk about race and racism, and then in private conversations, you know, Ann might have brought up something, and then I might have brought up something, you know, a difference because. When The Help came out, the movie The Help, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I said that was my mother and me, you know, because when I turned 13, I started babysitting for the lady that she was a maid for. She had two kids, and back in that culture during the day, if you were, quote, somebody, you would have a maid, just like in a movie, and, you know, your status in the community, you know, kind of centered around that for some stupid reason. Mm-hmm. And I watched how hard my mother worked, and I watched how she was treated. And I can remember sitting out on the back steps one day playing with the youngest. He was probably about 10 or 12 months old, and I was letting him down and bringing him up, and then I kissed him on the forehead. Mm-hmm. Unbeknownst to me, the mother was standing in the window right behind me, and she said, "I love that you are playing with him, but don't kiss him." Mm. And it really went straight to my heart, and I, you know, had a hard time with that, but I continued because we needed the money to work. But then I started paying attention to how we were treated. So we've kind of talked about that off and on. Mm. And we talk about our kids and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
Well, yeah. And there were a couple of other things. One thing was, it seemed on a daily basis we hear of incidents of some kind of racial injustice, and people are always shocked. And we talked about, you know, how interesting it is that we're shocked at such things. We also are part of a book club, and we had especially two books. One was fiction, one nonfiction, and they both dealt with racism. And that kind of stirred some conversation. And then when Pastor Russ did a class or a book study with Waking Up White, that was one that was so emotional. I couldn't even respond in that particular group. But it really raised our awareness of people want to talk about it. They're afraid they might say the wrong thing. They're not sure how to feel about it. It leaves them feeling kind of vulnerable to say anything, mm-hmm. just real uncomfortable. And that's when we started talking about what could we do. We've already started the conversation with each other. How could we learn more and be helpful to other people and provide a place for a conversation to keep going?
Yeah, I think people do feel very uncomfortable because they're afraid they're going to say the wrong thing and then offend.
Mm-hmm.
But I think on the other side, too, you get people that feel like if we talk about it, then racism doesn't go away. Like, there's a certain thought that let's just not talk about it. It's over with. We're just bringing back up, you know, old things. And what would you say to those people that say talking about it just exasperates racism or race?
I would say to them that on a daily basis, if you pay attention to the news or the TV or if you're on Facebook, you know, no matter whether that's true or not, whether those things are true or not, it still exists. You hear about, for instance, taking children away from the immigrants
mm-hmm.
and putting them in like a cage or putting them in, isolating them away from their parents. Can you imagine what those children feel like?
Mm-hmm.
So racism does exist, and just about every time my president opens his mouth, some of that comes out. And I think what's happening in our society today is that people are listening to him, and they think when they do something like that, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not okay.
It kind of gives the open permission.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just saw, I think it was a news story that in this primary so far across the U.S., we've had more white nationalists, Nazi party people run
right.
than any other time in our history.
Right.
So there's a certain way of talking about it, right, that mm-hmm. brings up different things. Talking about it in a way to understand each other mm-hmm. is the way to go, but talking about it in a way of isolating and alienating one another is what causes, you know, these other people to run that probably shouldn't be running.
And I think there's a lack of information as well. I think we don't really recognize the history. It's kind of, we've kind of turned our head. We kind of want to know, and yet we
mm-hmm.
don't know if we want to get that involved. So I think reading, listening to podcasts, looking at documentaries, doing some reading, getting some background. You know, there shouldn't be fear in at least doing that part
mm-hmm.
of your own research to find out. 'Cause so often, and I'm guilty of this for sure, we kind of communicate with people who think like we do.
Yeah.
And so it's really hard to start a conversation and to be a good listener, but at the same time be willing to confront somebody for statements or things that just aren't accurate.
Yep. A couple of things that come to mind when we talk about is racism. A lot of people choose to think, you know, after the civil rights movement, racism is dead. I grew up in Northwest Iowa, a little small farming community, 99% white. And I decided to go to college in the Chicago area. And the Chicago area, as you all know, is a melting pot of different cultures and races. And the interesting thing that happened while I was there was it was during the 2008 presidential election. And when President Obama won. And if you want to say that racism is dead, but you were in Chicago when Obama won at a conservative white college, Christian college, then you need to experience that, because there was a lot of things that happened after the election with a lot of our students who are African American. And I know one girl in one of my classes, church and ministry class, explained that the day after the election, she was waiting at the bus stop and somebody drove by and yelled out the N-word at her. And these are things that, coming from a small farming community, I'm like, this is crazy. But it's happening. And it's not only that, but it's like the small ways that we treat one another for different skin color or ethnicity that we don't even realize, right? And so these are things that are happening, but we don't know it until we're aware of it or made aware of it, right? Yeah.
That's true. Because what our experience in book club was, when we were discussing one book about racism, we had a couple people in class that thought that didn't relate to them. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to say, but I didn't. Don't you read the newspaper? Don't you watch TV? Don't you read when you see what's happening? And you know, some people do it innocently. They really don't know what they're doing. It's like when I was going to the rec center, one of the incidents that happened, one of the ladies in my water aerobics class asked, do you have to drive a long way to get here? And I said, do you want to know where I live? And she said, oh, no, I don't want to know where you live. I just wondered if you had to drive a long way, which she was not able to say, yes, do you live here in Castle Rock? Now, there's a lady in church last Sunday that came over to me and gave me a hug and introduced herself. And she said, do you live in Castle Rock? And I said, yes. See, that's a straightforward question. You want to know, you ask the question. And she asked, how long have you been here? I said, oh, since 2004. So she said, quite a while. She said, well, I'm just new here, and I'm introducing myself to everybody, and I'm so glad to meet you, and blah, 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 blah. But another example is we have a neighbor that goes on these long cruises, and Ernest usually takes care of their house and sprinkler system for them. And the city was doing some work over in that area where we live, and so one of the guys that worked for the city was coming out of the property as Ernest was coming out, and he said, are you one of the maintenance guys? So Ernest just said, no, I live right across the street. So it's those kind of assumptions of people asking us when we first moved here. You're both retired. How can you afford to live in this neighborhood? My husband answered them, but when they asked me that question, I asked them, and you want to know that because? You know, in a soft tone, not an aggressive tone.
Right.
You know, why do you need to know that?
Yeah, because what would happen if you had more aggressive tone?
I think it would have escalated and would shut the other person down.
Yeah.
And I credit, you know, living in Iowa, Michigan with this, because I'm usually very patient. And people ask me a question, I would usually answer it. But when you start asking those kind of questions, you know, why do you need to know that? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I had a neighbor that wanted to know how much we sold the house in San Diego for. Why do you need to know that? You know, so that's how I've handled, you know, some situation that I run into here. But
One of the things that I noticed when I moved to Denver and then Castle Rock, so I went to college in Chicago, then West Michigan for seminary. And moving out here, what I realized was Denver is pretty white, mm-hmm. like, I mean, compared to Chicago, but, mm-hmm. And then Castle Rock is even more so. Mm-hmm. And I think I caught a conversation with somebody one time about, you know, up in the city, that's where you can see that it diversity, because I was explaining, it's not very diverse down here. I said, nah, maybe, but it's not as diverse as other places are. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting to watch, especially Castle Rock, as it's getting larger mm-hmm. and larger, more people moving in. Mm-hmm. What's always going to happen is it's going to become more diverse as mm-hmm. more people move in. And I like to watch other people's reactions when there's somebody of different color walking through the grocery store, mm-hmm. just to kind of see how, mm-hmm. because like we've talked about a little bit, there's those little things like assuming that they didn't own a home, that they mm-hmm. were maintenance, mm-hmm. and just seeing how they react, but they don't understand what they're doing either necessarily.
Those nuances, I think, will go on forever. Mm-hmm. You know, I still have to watch that. Mm-hmm. I'll make a comment, and then I'll think, how did that come across to somebody? Yeah, that's not what I meant. Mm-hmm. But you really don't know sometimes about your level of, I guess, just not understanding. I think most people kind of want to get beyond this.
Yes.
But they're kind of afraid to address it. They're not sure what to do about it. And I think one reason people don't take more action is because, like, what do I do? This mm-hmm. has been going on forever. So how do we change it? What do we do? And I think just being open to those comments or open to saying something to get a response and being open to, was it the right thing or not the right thing? Mm-hmm. I think that carries us somewhat. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we hope to do, just get people talking, reading, being aware, mm-hmm. watching things, so that we can maybe get beyond some of this injustice.
I've shared information with peacemakers as we sit there, sewing and knitting or whatever. And some of the feedback I've gotten back, because one of the members has shared some of the things I said to other groups that she's been with, is that people don't believe that kind of stuff happens here in Castle Rock. Mm. But it does. You know, it's kind of a subtle racism. I have not run into anybody that's been overt racist. But, you know, I've had the questions like going to Walgreens and buying stuff, and I'm the fifth person in line, so everybody goes through, checks out, and I get there, and she wants to see my ID, and I said, why did you need to do that? Nobody ahead of me got their ID checked. And she said, it's just random. I said, tell you what, if I have to show you my ID, you can take all of this stuff and put it back on the shelf, because I'm not going to buy it.
Why would she ask for the ID?
Well, that's the point. There's so many stories like this on a daily basis.
Yeah, so, you know, and if you're not thinking, you're just okay. And so you whip out your driver's license and you show it to him and da-da-da-da-da. You know, but I don't know, I was feeling kind of perky that day. And so I just said, no, I'm not showing you my ID. So,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
So it's those kind of things.
Did they want to know where you live, too?
No, they didn't ask me where I live. They just wanted to see my ID, you know, and stuff. So the thought process is, we don't get very many black people in here, so I better check this person out, kind of thing. It's not, you know, so it's, you know, and one of the instances that happens to me is trying to get, you know, when you're raising kids, you have to talk to them about what's happening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were in Ionia, you know, one time my mother was visiting, and one of my kids came home and said they'd been called the N-word at the bus stop. And my mother immediately jumped in and said, "Would you tell them bye?" And I'd hold it, time out. No, I won't teach them how to hate before I teach them how to love.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, "Did you feel you were a nigger?"
Mm-hmm.
And they said, "No." And I said, "Then that's more about that other person than it's about you. You know, did your friends call you that word?" "No." "Then you know, put your emphasis on the friends that you have rather than someone who you really don't know." You know, and I said, you know, because I used to do exercise with them, "Who are you?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to be? What kind of person do you want to be?" And that kind of stuff. So all my kids are married white people.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel very comfortable going just about anywhere they want to go.
Good.
So I do have to say, though, that the girls pick up the subtle racism quicker than the boys do.
Uh-huh.
That's been the interesting part of it. So.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah. So what's been meaningful for you two in these conversations with one another that made you want to extend it out to the congregation?
I'm hoping that conversations Ann and I had, I think we really got the spark from the discussion with Russ about Waking Up White. Even though I don't think the author of that book really guide, you know, what it is. You know, white privilege, what white privilege is.
Mm-hmm.
And white privilege is not a dirty word. It's knowing that because you're white,
right,
that you woke, you know, you were born white, and so you had an advantage from the very beginning.
And for some people, they don't like the term because it makes them feel guilty.
Right.
And they're like, "Well, I can't do anything about it." You can be aware of it.
Right.
That's the number one step, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's what I'm hoping to accomplish is to be aware of what white privilege means, to be aware of what you say to someone who is a minority. And as a Christian, what do you do when you're in a group and someone tells a racist joke? Oh, talking one-on-one with someone and someone makes a racist comment. What do you do? Do you not say anything and then feel bad afterwards because you didn't say anything?
Mm-hmm.
So my hope is that after we have this discussion, because I think it can be an ongoing discussion into some other social issues. As an individual Christian and as a Christian community, how can we make a difference? How can we, on an individual basis and as a Christian community, confront those racial issues or comments or that kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Ann? What has been meaningful about your guys' conversation? And
I think just carrying it farther with other people. Yeah, I think we were, just the book Waking Up White was an eye-opener for me. I had made an assumption that people knew more and were aware more of racial inequities and things that were happening than is really the truth. And these are good people, but the awareness is not always there. And so just hoping that we can carry it forward and other people will be more informed and more conscious of what's going on. And that other part, what do we do about it? That's the hard part. But doing it, I agree, both individually How do we take some action, even if it's just a personal kind of comment? Or as a group, as Christians, what do we do? Mm-hmm. Or as a community?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the other thing, when we had a discussion with Russ, most of the questions were directed at me, so I was, you know, my mouth was going up the whole time. So then Ann called me and said, let's meet for lunch. I sent an email, and I did. And so she said, I've been thinking about, you know, what we should do after the discussion of Waking Up White. And I would like to do something. I wondered if you would be willing to go along with me or to work with me in doing that. I said, certainly, because I had seen Russ like a couple of months after the discussion, and I had said to him, this discussion needs to continue. And he agreed with me. And so then we made arrangements to meet with Russ to see what he thought about it. Mm-hmm. And then we got busy researching books and that kind of stuff and found some very interesting books to be read. But
And I think we can do it without making Jeanette, you know, the only... Yeah. She is the expert because she is the black person, but she can't answer it. For all black
right.
people.
No. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting how we tend to do that. Like if we're talking about something around racism, well, usually everybody turns and looks at Jeanette.
Right.
So tell us what the...
yeah. I expect you know, there to be a lot of questions to me again.
Yeah. And that's natural for some people.
Right.
That's one of those things of being aware of how we do that.
Yeah.
Do you know Jonathan Smith that goes to our church? He's black.
Oh.
And
oh,
the yeah, other, I've seen him.
The other Sunday, when we announced the class, mm-hmm. This woman came up to him afterwards and asked him about the class on race. Just assuming he knew mm-hmm. information about it. He's like, I don't know anything about it. But just little things like that, right?
And
yeah. It's one of those things where, you know, he's very gracious too. Like, he understands. That's just one of those things people don't understand what they're doing.
Yeah.
And even if you're a person that's super aware or aware of all that stuff, you're going to have your blind spots too. And
mm-hmm.
you're gonna say things that don't sound right, and
yeah.
I think the best way to approach that is just being humble and being like, mm-hmm. "I'm sorry," you know,
mm-hmm.
and trying to understand more and have conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I should share it, but I'll share. I can always edit it out, right? This is a more vulnerable part on my part, but like one of the recent times for me. Going to college in Chicago, college, seminary, I've become aware of all this stuff. And I try and, you know, make other people aware. But when you're aware, you also slip up sometimes. There's this moment, my wife and I were having dinner at a restaurant. And our waiter was black. And he asked us what we were doing. So we're going to a movie. And it was like a chick flick. And he was like, oh, I'm sorry, man. And I said, well, next week... we're going to the movie I want to see, which is Black Panther. And then he got all excited about that because
mm-hmm.
he wanted to see it. And then after he left, I said to Michelle, and I'll say what I said, but then as soon as I said it, I was like, ugh. So I said, it's so great to see them excited. Right? And that, and I stopped. I was like, oh, why did I say that? Like, what I meant in my head was, I was happy that there's representation on film
mm-hmm.
for a group that has not had that. Because if you look
mm-hmm.
at Hollywood, black representation tends to be thugs,
mm-hmm.
gang members,
mm-hmm.
the villains,
right.
things like that. But the way I said it,
mm-hmm.
it came out really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And we just took that moment. I said, I'm sorry, that did not. And so then I explained and... but things like that
mm-hmm.
happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I wonder, is there space, like, in your class for people that understanding that those moments are okay as long as you recognize them?
Mm-hmm.
right?
And I hope that's what we can do, is build the awareness, like you were aware. And the more you're aware of what you're saying and what it could be construed as or what it could mean to someone else, is important. And we don't know. We have no idea what to expect. And all we can do is kind of set the underpinnings that it's safe to say what you need to say, but do it in a way that doesn't do anything against humanity or what, you know, our basic beliefs are.
Now, I would like to have the atmosphere in the class be that, yes, you can say what you need to say, and we'll deal with it from that point on. You know, because if we don't do that, we might as well not have a class.
Yeah.
I had a long conversation afterwards with Danelle. And so one of the questions she asked me, so she said, there's a Black Presbyterian church in Denver. Why did you come here instead of going to that church? I said, you know, when I decide to go to church, I don't care who's in there, because I have a different reason for being in church. And I am not about to drive 60 miles round trip to go to church on Sunday. So, you know, when we decided to move here, and I drove by and I saw New Hope Presbyterian Church, oh, good. You know, I'm 5 minutes away, you know, come in and do my due diligence on Sunday, and I'm good to go. So it never occurred to me, and so she, you know, we were talking about some of the things that happened in the South, you know, like having to step off the sidewalk when white people were coming, and that kind of stuff. And she said, how do you not have a lot of hate and grudges built up? I said, because I don't hold on to that stuff. You know, probably prior to my living in Ionia, I probably would have held on to it. You know, because I still had some of that in me. But having lived there, I don't hold on to it.
Yeah.
You know, I remember it. And I can share that information with somebody else, but I don't hold on to it. I don't seek vengeance or anything.
Yeah, and it, you know, it is hard because, like the story I shared, I hold a certain amount of guilt and shame with that. And I shared it with a life group like 2 months ago. I was visiting life groups, and they were talking about the book Waking Up White. Mm-hmm. And so I used my story as an example of those blind spots that some of us, even with awareness, have, or saying the wrong thing or slipping up. And, you know, I carry guilt and shame with it, but I also know that the more you tell these stories, the more you're waking people up to what are the things I do that or say that affect those of minority.
And it's not a one-way street. It happens on both sides. You know, Chicanos or Latinos know how they've been treated. Blacks know how they've been treated. And, you know, any other ethnic group know how they've been treated. So it's up to individuals to determine how they're going to handle that stuff. But, you know, you go in the Black community, you know, you can hear all kind of things about white people.
Yeah.
You know. And most of them don't know that many white people. Mm-hmm. I won't say most of them, some of them don't know that many white people. But they have their own beliefs. And those beliefs are based on how they grew up, their parents teaching, or whatever. I chose not to teach my children that. And, you know, some people would say I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I even had a minister one time. I went to the 8 o'clock service. And their 11 o'clock service had all the gospel choirs and all that kind of stuff. And it was my first time visiting there. And he said, oh, you don't want to hear, you don't want to hear the truth or something to that nature. And I said, why are you saying that? He said, because if you wanted to hear the truth, you'd be at the 11 o'clock service. And I'm going, why not just say, I'm so glad to see you.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm in church. Does it really matter what time I'm here?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I never went back.
Well, and that, I think that's one of the things the white community doesn't always understand. All black community, Latino community, they all have different types of ideologies, mm-hmm. and thoughts and politics within their community, just like white people do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if somebody asked me a general question about, and I had to be the spokesperson for all of white people,
mm-hmm.
that's...
It's impossible.
It's not possible, right?
Well, it's a good thing in the book, Awake White.
Yeah.
Because it started off with, done it, you don't think you have white culture, you do. You need to spend some time studying it and finding out what white culture is.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we all have our cultures, you know. And we do too, you know. And white people that we consider to be close friends have been exposed to some of that culture with coming to dine at a house or coming to just sit down and talk with us and that kind of stuff, because it's, you know, you get real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
the people.
One of the books we're using by Daniel Hill, The White Awake,
mm-hmm.
he begins by talking about white identity, and he talks about how people really can't, they don't know what to say about what is white identity that's different from other cultural identities.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of a wake-up call to people to
right.
think about what is white culture, what is white identity, and how does that impact other cultures?
How we've touched on it a little bit, but how does your faith influence this conversation? What part of your faith says that this is important to talk about?
Well, you know, I think the basic for me is just that we're all children of God. And as people of God, I think we have some responsibility for each other. The injustice is the thing that gets to me too, is acting on injustice, being aware of injustice and acting on injustice. The acting is sometimes hard to do, but that's where we need to really work on both individually doing something as well as a Christian community. So those are the biggest for me.
Hmm.
Okay. For me, as a black person, I've never felt unwanted at New Hope. I've never felt unwanted at any Presbyterian church that I've attended. And I've been Presbyterian since 1969. And I'm a peacemaker. I don't like conflict. I don't like injustice. And I have depended on God and my Christianity to get me out of a lot of illnesses and emergency type situations. And so I know there is a God.
Mm-hmm.
I feel it with every fiber of my being. And if I can do anything to help people understand racism and comments that are made and things that are done, the overpopulation of prisons and that kind of stuff, I want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind answering questions, no matter, you know, what the question is or what the comment is. I have no problems addressing any of that. So.
Yeah, it's... I mean, if we get down to it and we go back to basics of Christianity, and like
mm-hmm.
you said, Anne, is we're all children of God. We're all created in God's image. All of this seems kind of silly of what we created,
mm-hmm.
right? And that we've judged and created stereotypes based on color of people's skin. It's just like, It's mind-boggling in a way. But that's the part of the church now, to go forth and to reconcile people, mm-hmm. yeah. and to create unity in, despite of differences. And Russ is going to preach on that this Sunday, I think, unity. And mm-hmm. I think next week is reconciliation. And so it's going to be interesting sermons. I told him, I said, good luck. Those are hard topics to preach on, you know, because despite how much Russ or I or whatever preacher that's giving the sermon understands it, it takes many, many times kind of hitting people over the head for them to finally, for it to sink in. Mm-hmm. They'll hear it and be like, oh yeah, I agree with that, that's nice, but their life, their actions don't mm-hmm. match up to it. But that's the work of the church, mm-hmm. right? And you two are doing the work of the church, and that's great to see. And if people want to come to your class, that's starting June 10th and 12:30.
12 to 1:30.
Mm-hmm. And where is it at?
In Sedalia Room.
In Sedalia Room, okay.
I have a feeling we probably have to move more chairs in there.
Yeah.
I don't know, the response that we've gotten and the panic this past Sunday because all the books are gone.
Right.
I expect that, you know, because we've been to several of Russ's classes together, and usually there's 15, 20 people. I have a feeling this might be more than that. It may drop out, you know. And I know people have come up and said, I can't come every Sunday, but I want to come. I said, you're welcome, whenever you can come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, I saw on Monday or Tuesday morning, the books, there was no more on the shelves. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's a good sign.
Yeah.
And so, blessings on that class. I hope to stop by a couple times, and I won't be there 2 weeks from now because that's our mission trip. We'll be gone. And, mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm excited for this, and excited that you two are leading it, because.
And then we'll ask the group if they mind being podcasted sometime. So we'll let you know what their response is.
Yeah, we can set up microphones and we can have a live podcast with all those people. That's great. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Do you guys feel good about the podcast, what we've talked about? Is there anything you want to add, or are you good to kind of end it?
I can't think of anything.
We can always do a part two.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
See, this hasn't been that hard, is it? You thought it?
It's been fine. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was thinking, I didn't share personal things, but I think as we get with the class and mm-hmm. different topics mm-hmm. come up, that we'll do more of that.
Yeah, and it's hard to, you know, get everything in a small 40-minute conversation.
Yeah.
But thank you for joining me, and thank you for doing this, and we'll talk again.
Okay, well, thank you.